Come on, everybody. Here we go.
You're mad.
Thank goodness for that, because if I wasn't, this would probably never work.
But I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away, what are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
You stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
Time travel commencing in T-minus 10 seconds and counting.
The Disney Guides Uncensored, where we explore a lot more than just Disney. This is episode 122, recorded on Monday, August 2nd, 2021. We're your hosts, Drew and Tim. We're also joined by animator, author, and Disney Imagineer, Timmy Britt. On tonight's episode, we sit down with Timmy to discuss his career in animation, attraction development, mentor, and his latest book, Extraordinary Everyday Magic. Timmy, thank you for joining us tonight. I know you are a busy man, so thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to be here with us.
Oh, man, are you kidding me? This is great. I couldn't wait. I'm excited. You guys are fun.
Yes, and alongside you, we have to bring our audience's attention. Catherine Bell is also joining us to help you along your journey of this amazing book that you guys just published. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I guess I gotta get it off my chest right in the beginning. Yeah. I heard you guys have an interesting story on how you met and how this book came into tuition, right?
Yeah, but Timmy, you gonna let me tell that one, or do you want to?
No, go ahead.
Okay, my family went to Disney World in January 2007, and my daughter and I stumbled onto the Animation Academy. It wasn't advertised or anything, and she liked to draw. I said, "Oh, we can draw with a real animation artist." And we got about 20 minutes into Mickey Mouse, and I kind of looked at her and said, "Who is this guy?" Because he was so good. And so we kept going around and getting in line.
You know what? Never mind. Stop. You can't sit and say that stuff. Look, I'm a regular guy. I love the big intros, and I love being treated like that. It's the truth.
We went to his class a lot of times. And the real thing that impressed me was a few days later, we ran into him somewhere else in the park, because they make you do all kinds of stuff. He didn't just do drawing. He did other stuff. And we saw him at another attraction, and my kids all went, "Timmy!" And he turned around, and without missing a beat, he greeted all of us by name. He wow. knew our names. And I thought, this guy is amazing. So I wrote a letter to him.
Wait, we have to be fair to the audience. Her and her children might be the ugliest people you ever saw. They're so scary looking that it would be impossible to forget their names. It was like, you know, it was scary Catherine. It was really, they were really frightening. No, they were gorgeous and they were easy to remember. And I'm just kidding.
So I wrote this letter and it got him a lot of attention. And he wrote me a thank you note. And I had his contact information. And for 12 years, that was that. You know, everybody else got one page in my scrapbook. Timmy got six. I mean, he was my favorite attraction there. So years later, my stepson is a very good artist, and he was having trouble breaking into art. And I found my scrapbook and Timmy's letter, and it said, "If I could ever do anything for you, just let me know." And so I got on Google, and you know, the internet being what it is, in about 30 minutes, I got a phone call from Timmy, and we reconnected and so our family started to get to know each other. And I said, "You know, you have the most amazing stories. You really should write a book." And he said, "Well, I've always wanted to." He said, "I remember your letter. It was really well written. Would you like to write my book?" And I said, "I sure do." And so that's how.
Hold on. Yeah. I didn't know that she had already written a book before that and had all this proficiency at it. So I didn't just get a book. I got a book written by someone who's already been through the process.
Yeah.
And she, Catherine, I got to just tell the people. And then you can just listen, because I want to talk to these guys. It's really cool. How we met, it's true. She was a guest just like any other guest, and she came into my class. But she just took such a liking to what I was doing. She got the spirit of it, the whole, if you believe you can do this, you can. You walk out of there with pixie dust out of my class, because I make you believe that you can do it. And then I show it to you. I prove it to you. Because there's your drawing right there, and you did do it. And you can show that drawing to anybody, and they can recognize that it's Winnie the Pooh or Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse or somebody. And so that recognition.
My six-year-old had never touched a pencil ever, and he hasn't since. He's 21 now. Timmy had him drawing a recognizable Donald Duck in 10 minutes.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So, she really is a great writer, and she's really a brilliant person. And her life has not been easy, Catherine. People don't know this, but she, and I got to tell them, Catherine, like she suffers from MS really bad and diabetes and a lot of things. You know, it's a laundry list of things, but some days she can barely walk, and she's still helping other families and doing all kinds of things. She's an amazing, remarkable person. So to team up with her and have her display the magic in such a polite way was a real help for me. You know, I'm a street rat from Philadelphia. I don't really know much from crossing my T's and dotting my I's. How did I make it in Imagineering? Well, it's just magic, really. But and a lot of education, a lot of practice, yeah. A lot of hard
and I'm
work.
Sure we'll get there soon, Tim. You don't want to sell yourself short, right? So Casper,
so wait. Yeah. Let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
I got Dustin that job down in Orlando, promised her I would. So now he's in Universal, actually, doing characters of people. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So he took his art all the way from Texas because she asked for help, so I gave it to her. And that's how it is. You know, for her to say such nice things about me is really, really the big story here, because we wrote a book together. It's hard to stay friends with somebody you write a book with. Oh, my God. She should have strangled me 1,000 times, honestly. I'm impossible. So – hats off to her for that alone.
That's awesome. That's great. So that, I mean, we're going to talk so much more about this. But before we get to that, a few more things we just sort of mentioned. This episode is sponsored by Wish Upon Magic, an Etsy experience specializing in stickers, keychains, Mickey ears, and handmade home goods, where a portion of every purchase goes to Make-A-Wish Foundation to help spread the magic. If you happen to mention the Disney Guys Uncensored in the notes section before checkout, you will get some magical freebies, which I love. You get a little mystery miscellaneous box of all different types of fun stickers. You don't know which one. Every time is different. So Wish Upon Magic is your place for fluffy handmade items. Give them a follow on Instagram at Wish Upon Magic, Etsy, and their website www.wishuponmagic.com, where you can find new magical selections every week. So yep, they're a great sponsor of us. We really love those guys. They have some amazing products. Wish Upon Magic, go take a look. And as Timmy has been mentioning and Catherine about their amazing book, we are doing a little giveaway this week. So we are giving away Timmy's amazing book.
I want somebody to read it. There's a chapter in it for everybody. There, you know, we just call them
really
little chapters, but it's a story of a life told in chapter form, and it follows along. If you stick with it, it follows along. And and like I said, Catherine just did such a great job. There's a chapter in it for everybody. I just want someone to have it. So I hope magically this goes to the right person, and who knows, it might change their life.
It may, and I absolutely love the way you structured the book. You know, again, we'll get to that in a minute. But anyways, if you want to win this book, there's four possible things you could do. You could go over to the Ohana Facebook group, which we all, it's our main Facebook group on for all of us. That's where we chat, we do giveaways, everything on there. Go and join. If you have not done that, maybe go subscribe to our YouTube page. You could write a review for us on Apple Podcasts, or email us a question. Email us a question for the show, or even for Timmy. We'll get it over to him. Yeah. And this contest ends next week, Saturday, August 7th, so we can announce the winner on next episode. So this is an amazing book. We want to send it to someone, like Timmy said, special, so you can share. And then as well as that, Timmy and Catherine are doing a promotion for anybody that does want to go to Amazon and buy that book. Once you buy it, you can go to Timmy's website, www.timmybrick.art/contact, and click the checkbox code that says DGU for Disney Guys Uncensored. And he's going to send you a self-adhesive autographed nameplate that you can pretty much put right on the title page. So it's kind of like a little personalized autograph onto your book. So, you know, especially with COVID and book signings.
Yeah, we had to do it that way.
This is a great opportunity that we can kind of team up with Timmy and give you guys a little bit extra magic in that. So if you want to go out there and buy the book, which I highly recommend, you can do this for free and get this extra little bonus thing. So it's definitely something to check out. And before we get to Timmy, we have a very small few news updates. Let's head over to the Disney News Desk.
All right, folks, just a couple quick ones since we want to give Timmy as much time as possible to tell his amazing magical stories this week. But for that, a little bit less magical news. If you are headed down to Florida or out west to Disneyland, masks are back. The Delta variant is out of control. Florida is posting the craziest numbers we've seen in any state the entire pandemic just this weekend. please, please, please pack your masks, even if you weren't planning on it. They are required again. And be respectful to cast members if they're telling you to, you know, pull them up, wear them, etc. They're required in all indoor areas, line queues, and on all rides, whether that ride is indoors or outdoors. Technically, they're all counted as indoors. So mask up, social distance, get that vaccine if you haven't. We can get through this all together. All right. A little bit more exciting news. Destination D, the Florida D23 Expo, which has always been a much smaller version than the main D23 Expo out there in Anaheim, has confirmed for this year that both Josh D'Amaro, that handsome, handsome chairman of Parks and Resorts, will be making appearance, as well as the less handsome but no lot less important CEO Bob Chapek will be appearing. Neither of these gentlemen in their current roles have ever appeared at Destination D. So I suspect we may get some bigger than average announcements out of this year's D, Destination D. That said, I would normally be telling you to run, don't walk, to get those tickets you're thinking of going, except they sold out basically instantly. Luckily, Disney, with the increased demand, has said, keep an eye on D23.com. Many of the panels will be available in a recorded or live stream form. And in the coming days and weeks, they will have that schedule and how to watch those panels posted on D23.com. All right, last story of the week. Imagineering is moving its headquarters and roughly 2,000 jobs from Burbank, California to Lake Nona, which is a suburb of Orlando, Florida. As I said, roughly 2,000 jobs are affected, everything from the head creatives down to administrative assistants and everyone in between. Disney does say that this is a move that centers Imagineering back at the heart of where the innovation is, which is now Walt Disney World Resort with its four parks compared to Disneyland with its two. But the tax incentives in Florida compared to California can't be ignored. That said, I think our guest Imagineer Timmy Britt might have some opinion on this. So, Mr. Britt, what do you think? Is this a good move? Is this just purely a cynical business move? Is this good for the guests? Is this good for the Imagineers and their families? What do you think about this?
Well, I can't possibly have the right answer for all that. I can just tell you how I feel about it. And I think that when Walt got into Hollywood in California, it was the natural step to start there. But he dreamed of a bigger place. Doesn't matter if it's in Florida or Minnesota or Pennsylvania. He picked Florida because of the land and the price that he got it for. But I think his dream was to have something so big that it didn't matter how much you could imagine, we can build it. And if people support that and keep coming back to Walt Disney World, everything can branch from there, because it really does have it. It has Epcot. That was Walt's dream, was Epcot. So if you're going to bring Imagineering anywhere, bring it to Epcot, where Walt, you know, I mean, that was his. Now, I think that Disneyland is amazing, and I've never been there, but, you know, I'm 54 years old. So I know I'll be 55 October 25th, the same day that Walt Disney World was named after Walt. So, of course, I want it to be here in Florida. It has nothing to do against California. That's a beautiful paradise state. However, whatever reasons fiscally, politically, or whatever have caused this, that's above my pay grade. I just care about the art and Walt's mission and his dream. So Disneyland is nice, but if you've been there, people say it's fantastic, but it's small. And you can see some of the other like businesses outside of it still when you ride certain things. And that's kind of, it takes you away from your full immersion. Well, at Disney World, you're driving 3 miles before you even get to the gate. You know, there's all the parking lot, and then there's the transportation ticket center, you know, and then you finally get a ferry or a monorail, and then you enter the Magic Gate, you know, the gates of the Magic Kingdom. And you can't see anything from there other than the Magic Kingdom. So Walt's dream was realized through Roy and the Imagineers that originally built Disney World. It's like they just put a little extra magic into it because Walt wasn't there to see it. So every day, putting on your boots and tying your laces, knowing that you're doing it for this guy who had just changed the whole world with his imagination, is a great thing to be a part of. So I think that the Imagineers are welcome to Florida, and I think they're going to love it here. And I think the Imagineers that are left in California, you know, they're they're going to have an adventure of their own, probably, because I see a lot of things moving now towards Florida. And with Georgia right above Florida for movies, somehow, if we can work that out, the East Coast could be this mega mecca thing for movies and amusement parks. Just that's my thoughts now, and I don't know anything. And
that's
I'm a former Imagineer, by the way, too. I'm not currently an Imaginer. I'm former Imagineer. Once the pandemic hit, everybody was gone. So
yeah, I that's what I didn't even think of, though. Georgia totally forgot that that is really the epicenter of where a lot of it's filmed now. I mean, all your blockbusters are.
I'm just going to say it out loud. California is too expensive. You don't get the living quality that you want for a paradise. For whatever reasons, it's not there for you for the price that you're paying. And people aren't stupid. You know, we're not. And so you start paying $10 for gas when you're paying $4 for gas or $3 for gas somewhere else. Eventually it's going to add up. That's money you're just giving away for whatever reason. That isn't necessary for neglect and whatever reasons. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't say I'm an artist. What do I know?
Yep.
But
no, absolutely. And that was some great thoughts on that story.
Thanks.
From former Imagineer Timmy Britt, our guest this week.
Thanks, Tim.
And you're about to hear a lot more from him as we head over to the topic of the week.
All right, Timmy, as we do with all guests, we like to give credit where due, and we like to write all of our guests a very well-written introduction, a formal introduction, one might say. And I can't take credit. This is Ryan's baby, who couldn't be here tonight. He had to take care of his son, but he wrote this, and I'm going to read it for him.
I'm sorry that I couldn't see him or Jordana. Yeah. So would you give them both my warmest regards?
I will. Yeah. Jordana's on maternity leave, believe it or not. She's having her second child very soon, within a week or so, week or two.
Oh, that's great.
So she asked for a couple time off, and she's still here spiritually. We talk to her every day, but she asked a little, and so we respected that.
Absolutely.
So again, this isn't my credit, but I'm gonna do Ryan justice and read this formal introduction for you. So here we go. It's not often in life you come across a fully gifted people. In the truly incredible instance in our podcast, we have the opportunity to work with quite a few. We're going to be adding a couple of new names to that list this evening, so please allow us to formally welcome and introduce Timmy Britt to the show. Timmy has spent years traveling the United States from the fish markets of New Jersey to painted murals up and down the East Coast. He has worked, lived, and dreamed enough to fill four lifetimes worth of memories. From his work with the NFL to Wins to Go and Pets Plus, Timmy has seen and done it all. He is a true legend of the iconic lost attraction of Disney's MGM Hollywood Studios, the crowd-pleasing Animation Academy. He is a three-time recipient of the Spirit of Disney Award, plus the unprecedented winner of 70 Applausograms and 68 Guest Service Fanatic Awards. To say Timmy is a true spiritual successor to Walt Disney and the original Imagineers is no exaggeration. Timmy has worked on numerous projects of Disney and Universal Studios, but like Walt, he's never one to rest on his laurels. Timmy's greatest difference-making moments come from not behind a desk at Imagineering or Universal Development meetings. His biggest moments are when he selflessly gives back to the aspiring artists of tomorrow. Timmy has trained and inspired countless artists in his private tutoring, workshops, and speaking engagements through Timmy Britt Studios. To say he is beyond humble that Timmy has taken time out of his day to sit down with us and tell his story is an understatement. But like any great storyteller, you need people you can trust by your side. And we are so incredibly grateful to have Timmy's writing partner and co-conspirator, Catherine Bell, on the show as well. Catherine and Timmy are to Disney Imagineer writing as Ben and Jerry are to ice cream, or Lennon and McCarthy are to songwriting. You could search far and wide, but you don't find a more dynamic duo. Catherine and Timmy, welcome formally to the Disney Guys Uncensored Ohana.
Well, wait, Ryan wrote that?
He did, yeah.
Oh, can you hug him for me? That was so sweet.
So Ryan is my cousin.
It was really sweet.
Yeah. Ryan is
like, if
my
he just paged through the book and found that stuff out, he did a masterful job of putting it together and making it sound sincere, because I believed it.
Yeah, that's something we strive for here, the Disney Guys Uncensored.
And it was very well read, by the way.
I try to put justice into Ryan's words. But yeah, Ryan and I are cousins. We've known each other for 35 years.
Yeah, you're stuck with each other.
We're stuck. That's it. Best friends for life. Family for life. That's it. That's great. Then Tim, we found Tim and Jordana along the way in this journey of podcast and world.
Yeah.
But yeah, so no, we mean every word.
That might be the most amazing introduction I've ever had in my whole life. I hope I can live up to it. That was really big.
Like I said, just right. If you're half the man that your book says you are, we think you're going to deliver on that introduction and more for our listeners.
Put me to the test then. Go ahead and put me to the test.
We have some questions for you. We want to hear your stories. We want to hear your anecdotes. We want our listeners to experience the Timmy Britt that we have gotten to experience in our research over the last couple of weeks getting ready for this show.
Start off something then.
Yeah.
So this is how it works when you're an artist. You get inspired by things. I get inspired a lot. And as you're talking, telling me this, I'm just feeling so grateful right now that I just want to tell you something. There was a point in my career where I was on top of the floating mountains of Pandora. And from that vantage point, I'm on top of them now. There's all scaffolding and none of the guests know what's going on. But from that point, I can see all of Disney's property that he bought when he flew over with a helicopter. You're high enough. You're above Mount Everest, which is amazing to see that, first of all, be above Mount Everest and be standing there. But in Florida, when the heat's really bad in the summer in your building, there's moisture, especially when you're building a swamp. In a swamp, you're going to have moisture, and that's what we did. So when this moisture would rise in the morning as the heat would come up, it would almost cloud up around the top of the mountains. And then I'm on top of them. So I'm looking down on the mist as if it were clouds. And I want to tell you something. I can see Spaceship Earth. I can see the castle, and I can see Hollywood Tower Terror. I could see it all. And then beyond that, the Swan and Dolphin, I could see the hot air balloon at Disney Springs. You know, I could see it all. And then even beyond that, and just then, when I'm standing there, silent, they wouldn't flap their wings at all. Remember, I'm in Pandora, so I'm on top of the floating mountains. And here on Earth, we don't have the banshees, but we do have pterodactyls. And this one morning, I'm up there with my team, and somebody says, look, and I turn, and like six giant pelicans just come soaring through those clouds on top of the earth as I'm looking at over all Disney's property, and just quiet. But, man, they're scary. They look like dinosaurs. They really do. And you see their bill up close when they soar by you, the size of those wings, they're gigantic. We're strapped in, so in case we fall, but you're just frozen, and you don't even know because it's quiet. So you're real quiet. You have your hard hat on. They can see you and they get out of the way. But that's a cool moment that a lot of guests never, ever get to experience. And I just want to take you up there for a minute and show you that these are the moments that you have. Now, me, someone who loves Walt Disney, you know, my birthday is the same day that the park was named after him. And I'm there as a five-year-old boy. Now I'm standing on top of the mountains in Pandora watching these giant birds glide through the clouds as I'm looking at all his property. There's clouds. The only thing sticking up are like the icons of the parks. Awesome. And then beyond it, it's just a beautiful, beautiful memory that I have that I want to just take time to just tell you guys, just to share that. Have your audience have that.
Oh, that's amazing. Absolutely.
Timmy, you were a man who can both paint with a brush and paint with words. That was an incredible story. Definitely felt like I was there with those birds. As amazing a story as there was, let's just really quick get a little bit of background so our guests can know, you know, who Timmy Britt is, where Timmy Britt came from, and then we'll get into all those amazing attraction and park stories. So where did you grow up? Where are you from? Where'd you go to school? All that stuff.
So I got lucky because my parents stayed together and they put me through a Catholic school. So I kind of had a private education, but it was in the heart of Philadelphia. So there was trash cans, row homes, buses, motorcycles, you know, it was just a mess of people. So I guess competition was just bred in you. I don't know, because it was me and my buddies and we just kind of grew up. And I always in my heart wanted to work for Disney World. But just like everybody else listening, it just was a dream, you know, to be an animator for Disney. Are you kidding me? Who does that? In reality, the facts are they would get 600,000 applications per year for that position.
Wow.
And select one. Yeah. And so they accrued like 12 animators at once to run that attraction. And so we all had to kind of get along, but we all had different teaching styles and different ways to do stuff. But there's still that one Disney standard that we have to go by. So we'd help each other through the whole thing. You know, I could draw Mickey 1,000 times, 100,000 times. I still have to focus. I still have to think about it. You know, there's little curves and tightnesses. Like as you come around the mask of Mickey down to the cheek with that one line, it's a candy cane hook shape. I'm sorry, I'm talking art. But if you just slide your crayon around, you got to get that move. Now, then you got to do it backwards, because in symmetry, like when you draw something, it has to look on the left and on the right. That's pretty much. I mean, you're going to draw something, you want to. Now, with animation, you can stretch and squash it. But I'm saying, just in life, everything down the center you have one of, and everything on either side you have two of. So you have two eyes and one nose. Exactly. Two ears, one mouth. So when you're doing, when you're drawing like Mickey Mouse and you really want to get that curve, you know, you got to focus. You got to think about what you're doing. Then to go and teach it, well, then you have to be in a couple places at once in your head with it, because you got to think about your audience. There's a six-year-old in the front row, you know, and an 85-year-old person in the back row. So you lighten up a little bit and you let them breathe. And it was in that moment where I let people breathe in my class that the real magic happened. I saw some of your questions. One of them was animation versus Imagineering. That's not fair. That's a terrible.
So I was the last one. We're going to save it for you.
All right. So let me get back to your question. So I grew up in Philadelphia, never thinking I could do it. And then went so many times that I started to see what it was. But secretly, I'm also studying engineering, going to art school, learning the vocabulary, understanding what it's about. So that when I got there, if I ever got there to become an Imagineer, I'd have all the requirements. Never dreaming to do it, but just in case. Because it could serve me in other ways. I can draw and do murals and have a great life. I just have that as kind of a dream. And then I just realized, you know what? You get one life. That's it. If you have a dream that you believe in your heart, talking about it on your deathbed doesn't serve anybody anything, man. And if you don't make it, at least you can say that you tried. So if there's something in your heart, like I didn't even start my dream till I was in my late 30s. So there's no excuse for people to not believe and try. I'm an ordinary, everyday person. That's it. The extra and the magic, well, that's Walt and God. I mean, I prayed and I just did all the right stuff and met the right people. But I had a plan, and when I was wrong on my plan, the world, the universe shoved me back on my plan again. So somehow the path was always set for me, I guess, because every time I went away from it, life got bad. And every time I got close to it, life got good. So I was zeroing in on something for me. For you, it might be making cupcakes, making horseshoes, making candles. I don't know whatever your art is, but everybody has one. And if you are free, like you are in the United States at least, to go out and do something, now's the time. Like, what are you waiting for? I had four amazing dreams come true once I realized that if you just have a dream that you believe in with all your heart and you just do the work, that you can get there. Because if you're on the right path, things will be provided for you. Somebody will show up at $5 when you need gas. Somebody will show up with a ham sandwich when you're starving. Somebody will show up with a place to stay if you're on the road. It happens, but you have to be on the right path. And that's the advice I can give you as an older guy who's this wise genie wizard passing down some judgment and some wisdom on you all. Be good. Wake up grateful every day.
And what was that path for you? I know you did some. Did you have a formal art education?
Oh, yeah.
So you went to art school.
For eight years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm into it, man.
So from there, was your first job out of art school painting the murals?
Yeah, it wasn't like that. So what happened was I was painting before I went to school because I had to get through high school. So I was always drawing art school. I got a scholarship to art school. So I didn't have to pay for the first 4 years, but then I loved it so much I went for four more to study life drawing and figure drawing and things like that. I really love that medium, charcoal. I love charcoal and newsprint. Staring at a body that's staring there, and you just take the charcoal and just find the edges and you just sculpt it with charcoal. It's just so beautiful. So if you have that kind of passion, you just love it. But to do that, I had to work. You can't just go draw, you know, who's going to pay? Look at this guy. He loves to draw. Let's pay him. No, I had to work. So that meant flipping pizzas, making cheeseburgers, cutting lawns, you know, doing whatever it took, you know. And that gave me that sense of, hey, there's nobility in a job no matter what it is. If you have a job, then it's noble. I don't care what it is. If you have a job that you show up for every day, that's a noble task. Mm-hmm. And you're no worse than anyone else. No matter what your job is or their job is, if you show up every day and do your job at the best of your ability, that's a very noble task to do. So flipping pizzas, I didn't care. I had a goal. I was going to get through school, or I was going to pay this bill or whatever. And on it went. But I never thought I'd ever go work for Disney World. It wasn't until I worked for NFL Films that I really thought, well, maybe. Well, why not? Because NFL Films, I just got lucky. I walked in the wrong door and met the right guy. It was amazing. And Steve Sable was like the president of NFL Films, but he just took a shine to me. He just liked me. He just thought I was a nice kid. He introduced me to his girlfriend, Penny, who ran the animation department. And next thing you know, all my schooling and education and art is coming to this place where I'm animating, you know, the the theatrics that happen between plays in an NFL game on live TV. So to go from one to the other was amazing. But it was really a mechanical job because I also studied engineering. So I could do something practical with my life when my art didn't work. Like my dad told me it always would never work. You're never going to make it as an artist. So he said, I swear, instead of taking you to Disney World, I should have taken you to NASA because then you would have been an astronaut, you know? And I'm like, I still would have drawn, you know, I couldn't look out this window of a spaceship and not look at the beauty of our planet. Like the blues and the whites. Oh, like I would love to see that, you know, but I'm not going to be in a spacesuit for 7 days. I just can't do that part. You know, I don't think they take them off. So I worry about that.
So Timmy, also I saw East Coast Murals. I guess tell me a little bit about that as well and Murals, how that's going.
It wasn't East Coast. I did them on the East Coast, but it was so somebody skimmed through something and got part of it. I did murals up and down the East Coast, but my mural company was called Imagine That, because I'd go into your house, or maybe you had a boat, or you had a pool, or you had a backyard, or you had some event coming up, or whatever your creative endeavor that you were faced with. If you called me, Imagine That, we'd find a way to make it work for you. Now, that was mostly murals. So you'd open up a water ice place, and you'd have 7 different flavors.
Oh, hold on. You just said – you just reeled off water ice, which I don't think Drew actually even knows what it is. The only reason I know what that
I'm from Philadelphia.
I was born in Mountain Laurel. Yeah, I'm from that area of Jersey. Didn't live there long. But I don't think our listeners have any idea what water ice is.
Oh,
so explain that real quick.
So as quick as I can – if you take ice and you shave it down to its finest crystals and then compact it into a ball and then pour the sweetest, gooeyest, greatest syrup over it, like raspberry or grape.
Snow cone.
Exactly right. Yeah. But they don't have a real long shelf life. You better eat them as soon as it's in your hand.
It's a Philadelphia snow cone, more or less, for our listeners. Yeah. But always called water ice, never water ice.
So
that's the thing. I've been teased my whole life because I say the word water. Everybody else says water, and I can't say that word.
Timmy, I'm from Rhode Island. You don't have to.
Drew can't speak comprehensible at all. Merle, we've already heard Merle at least 4 times in this episode.
So I was browsing your website. You have some amazing home Merles, right? So I'm assuming people that have, you know, new kids, maybe Jordana should call you. You know,
exactly.
Nurseries, things like that. So, I mean, do you still do stuff like that today as well?
I have a team now. So if there was something that you really wanted to be done, I wouldn't say no to anything. I just, you know, I can't run and paint happy birthday on everybody's bedroom wall, though, anymore. Like, it's your birthday. But I used to. I used to go in and we'd make the most elaborate birthday parties with all these props or, murals. People having babies would be – that was the bread and butter. Like, everybody – they'd buy curtains and they'd buy a bedspread and they'd say, can you match this? Well, sure I can. Sure. If you can imagine it, we can.
But you're more in the commercial business, I would imagine, for that type of stuff now.
Well, now you'll come to me when you have the side of a building that you want to paint it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They got to ask, do any vans, any cool vans with like a wizard fighting a dragon, any of that sort of stuff?
I didn't do a wizard fighting a dragon. I did a dolphin, but it was on a van. And the whole time I was painting the dolphin, I was thinking, man, I wish this was a wizard or a dragon.
Are you trying to reference
I wish it was a Wizard of Dragon. Remember, when I first saw, I thought there were unicorns back there. But it was just a dolphin, and I kept thinking, man, this should be something really cool. But it was a beautiful dolphin.
For our listeners, since this is not a video podcast, in the background of my office, I have some cases full of figures and statues that I guess look like a wizard or a unicorn if you can't see them up close.
I'm far away, so I see really cool shapes. But without my glasses on, I see horses with unicorns.
So I might have to get some unicorns to fill out the rest of the case.
Yeah.
So how did you end up from the NFL to Disney? Did you go right into that Animation Academy job?
It was horrible. No, let me tell you something really horrid. So I'm driving a van that the NFL rented on a rainy day in New Jersey, and I go around a turn, and this van that we rented had these big heavy shelves in it that weren't bolted to the walls. So when I made the turn, the shelves fell, fishtailed the back of the van off the road into the mud, and at 45 miles an hour, I hit what was the equivalent of a telephone pole that just split the van in half and put the steering wheel through my leg. It put me into a cast for a year from my toes to my hip. It was horrible. And then in that time, the NFL network bought the NFL Films, and then it was a whole new entity. So all the people that worked at NFL Films that were all my contacts and friends, are now working for NASA, which I know nothing about. So I have a broken leg and my job's gone. It was a disaster. It was really probably the worst part. Like, that was one of them. That wasn't the worst part, but that was a tough part of my life right there. Because my wife was pregnant with my son at that point. And, you know, life got real, really fast and hard. And so we pulled together. And it's because life was so bad that when it was all over, I mean, when the minute it was over, we had booked a flight to Walt Disney World to celebrate. And it was in that trip that she said to me, you know, I don't know what you're waiting for. You belong here. I'm like, but there's a 20-year waiting list. She's like, I don't care. I'm like, but people from all over the world submit. Why would they? She goes, I'm telling you, they don't have the same spirit. You need to get down here. So I went home thinking about it, and I pulled her aside. I said, you need to look me in the eyes right now and tell me if you mean it, because if you say yes, we're selling everything we have, and we're moving down to Florida. I'm going to try. And that's exactly how it happened.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I went down, but I didn't just run down there. I sat and paced in my apartment for a month in the middle of the night, just walking and talking to myself about how could I do this? How could I get this job? So I thought of a way to make the audition, to take control of my own audition, really, and bring it to light when they weren't expecting it so that they wouldn't forget it. And then that'd be on there. That's the only thing I could think of. So I thought, well, how would I do it? I've seen the class before, the animation class, and has been a guest. And I just knew that was my in. I knew if I could get in that class. Turns out I end up winning all these awards. I hate talking about myself like this, but it worked.
You should.
It worked. Like, when you ask the question between animation and Imagineering, and I'm glad you're recording this, because I think I've given this enough thought now that I can answer you the right way. In animation, I was in air conditioning, and I had fun. And I had little kids, and Buzz Lightyear would stop by, you know, and it was fun. And it was you're always like interacting with the guests, and it was alive. It was really great. It was the most fun job I ever had, and I had a lot of jobs. That was the most fun job I ever had. Being an academy instructor to teach other people how to draw the characters was phenomenal. Plus, you got to do a little show with Mushu, so you're on stage with like the voice of Eddie Murphy while you're doing the what is animation kind of movie. So that part was amazing, but Imagineering was like spiritual. There's something about that gets inside you as a fine artist, that you know you're working with other people that are so talented, that were selected, and that together we're sharing lunch and we're sharing ideas and we're sharing paint, we're sharing brushes, but the whole time we're getting to know each other. And in that process, we can start to anticipate each other's moves and work together symbiotically like one group. So you take like 50 to 100 different Imagineers and give them all little people, like little I'm sorry. I don't mean little. I just mean like a smaller team underneath. So each Imagineer is an art director, and he'll have six artists underneath of him. And then so your team is doing this and their team's doing that. And then one guy's out one day, so you steal somebody from another person's team. But it was just through this one big, beautiful harmony of art on the highest level. The people that I worked with, they didn't even speak the same language. We had people from all over the world. When I say 50 people, I mean like 50 people from around the world that were the best at what they did. And so to work with those people, my God, I'm just this little street rat from Philadelphia flipping pizzas. And now all of a sudden I'm standing next to people that were just icons in Disney legends, and they're just amazing to work with. But they just call me Timmy, just like I would call them, you know, Jolt or Joe or whatever. You know, they're just people. We're all just people. You're just a person. I'm just a person. It's your attitude that matters. And that's what he comes in and says, okay, he has all these great quotes, but people use them all the time. But if you actually live one of the quotes and apply it to your life, you'll always find you're a better person for it. And now, I've never said any of this before. This podcast right here that we're doing, this is all new stuff. It seems like I'm getting better and better at these podcasts, because I'm giving you guys something that I hope that your listeners are listening to, because it's really valuable stuff, that there is magic out there. And it's not in the, you know, yes, there's magic in the movies and there's magic in everything else, but in real world, in the real life, there's a kindness that happens and a giving for others that brings on rewards that have energy, and that energy can't be destroyed. So what can it do? It can be transferred into other things. And then now I'm inspiring you. You're inspiring me. Now look what we've created. And we're made to build and create as humans. I don't think we're here to destroy and have war. No way. And there's so many of us. We're supposed to communicate a little better. We should try harder.
Yeah,
I agree for sure. Speaking of communicating, I think we have a couple more animation-related questions. And then thing I'm sure the listeners are chomping at the bit, we want to roll on to those attractions.
Yep.
So, hey, you guys, wait. Yeah. You guys might want to make two shows out of this, honestly. I can talk.
We might have to.
We'll keep it going. So you had this amazing interview for Disney. You got hired. So where does that really take you in Disney? What was your first job as a cast member for Disney?
Oh, man, my very first job was parking strollers. I was. And, man, they had to be lined up right. And the tricky thing about strollers is, do you guys have kids? I don't know if you have kids.
I have two. Yep.
Okay, so you know
I've done the strollers in Disney. I've done the double strollers in Disney.
A double stroller. So imagine the crap that can fall off of a double stroller. Times that by 50 or 100, however many people put them there. And people just put them and run. They don't, you know, stuff falls off and they don't even see it.
Popcorn buckets going.
Oh, my God, there's birds on them and squirrels on them. So that was the first challenge. Here I am, a grown man now with this. I got this great opportunity, but they don't just move you into your role. You have to be a cast member. You have to, you know, I worked for a part of Hollywood Studios called the Animation Courtyard, and there's three attractions in that part. So I had to be a part of the whole courtyard just to have that one job. Once I got that job, it took all my time and I didn't have to do anything else. But to get there, I had to prove that I could, that I was part of the team and I would do it. And I loved it. I loved it because I knew it was only temporary.
Yeah.
Other people, that is their life. They're 30 years doing that with the strollers. And God bless every single one of those people. My God, they should get the Spirit of Disney Award. That is amazing.
I agree. So Animation Academy, right?
Yeah.
At Hollywood Studios. I guess fill in the audience. Not everyone might even know what Animation Academy even was.
Oh, that would be so sad.
It would be sad.
So there was three attractions in the Animation Courtyard. One of them was the Voyage of the Little Mermaid, which if you haven't seen it, you got to see it. It's this voyage under the sea. I'm not sure with pandemic and all the changes in Hollywood Studios where it is. So if you can see it as fast as you can. That's what I'm going to say to you, because Playhouse Disney is opposite that. For the real little ones to go on, there was a Playhouse Disney show. There was Bear in a Big Blue House back then and all kinds of wonderful things. You know, you guys will remember the ones. What was it? I can almost remember the song about the rockets. We're ready, set, go. And, the Einsteins.
I could still watch that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was there when that was open for you to come and meet all those great characters. It was fun. And I got to tell you, the artists behind that were amazing. So you have one live show. Well, two live shows. One with just amazing stuff with Ariel. The other one with all the little ones' favorites. And then in the middle, they put the Art of Animation, which is supposed to encompass everything from feature animation to plush toys to paintings to whatever. Art, basically. Disney art. And at its best. And so people, I don't think, really understood it, because the way it laid out, you went in one little secret door to see a movie.
Yeah.
It was 15 minutes long. Then they meander through a bunch of stuff where there's no real, you know, hey, check this out. Or, you know, Disney doesn't hit you over the head with it. You have to almost find it. And that's the way it is with good art. You could look through a whole museum, but when you find that one piece that just you could go and stand in front of for hours. Well, that's how it was with the Animation Academy, because it was secret little games for the kids and stuff to see and real interesting things. And you get to see an artist painting a real live cell down in the fishbowl, and you could talk to them if you wanted to as you pass. But then you came to this little area with a couple benches, and that's it, with two doors that were closed. And there was a cast member there at all times with a little clicker. And if he didn't tell you, and you could just walk right out into the gallery and on with your day. But if you knew what was in those doors and you're willing to wait 20 minutes, you got to spend time to draw with a real Disney animation artist. And that was really cool. So, you know, you're getting taught the right way, the Disney way. They took each one of those artists and they made them do it the Disney way so that they would do it the Disney way. And they did the same thing to me. There's a way to draw things Disney.
We had
training.
And did you have free range on who you wanted to draw that day and stuff like that? Or is that kind of
it's funny you ask that. They would have characters that were like the standards, like the Fab Five, Mickey, Donald, Minnie, Pluto, and Goofy. Okay. So you have those characters. And so you're going to be trained on those characters. So as an artist, the quicker you develop, the more characters you can add to your repertoire. Up to like 20 characters. The thing is, there's a formula to drawing the characters. Once you learn the formula, you can draw anybody. It's just, you just do different lines, but it's the same formula, same follow, the same pattern. Well, I caught on to that really quick, and I just rolled through them. So once you have a bigger repertoire, you can, when the guests are saying, how about Jiminy Cricket, you don't have to say, like, I never like to use the word no in Walt Disney World, and it served me really well. I won a lot of awards, finding every way possible to not say the word no. So I find thousands of ways to tell you whatever I can tell you without saying no to you. I will not use that word in
Walt Disney World. I like that in life. That's clever.
Yeah. Thanks. That's nice of you to say so. Yeah. If you treat people that way, like, yeah. I want to help you. I can't give you this, but I promise you I can give you that. So then you go ahead and give them that.
I like that.
Plus, I was working there, and it was like year of a million dreams. So we had a lot of leverage to give things to the guests, too. So I could give them signed autographs from this and that. I have Mr. Incredible come over and take a picture and sign a thing. You know? So I could do a lot. I had a lot of freedom with the guests. And I used it to make the experience as magical as we could. But some of the other artists – just like there's one person really like Winnie the Pooh characters, and that's they would only do Eeyore, Pooh, and Piglet. That's it. They had to do Mickey. Everybody had to do Mickey. But that's it. After Mickey, if you couldn't do another character, you weren't going to teach other people to do it. So it went on. But the artists wanted to do it. You know, they wanted to. But some of them were just kind of happy with the couple that they did. And that's how I got my job, because I saw there's a place for me, because I'm a little bit more effervescent, let's say, than most people. And I kind of bubble onto the stage a little bit with how much I'm happy to be there. So it's not about Walt or Magic or Mickey or anything else. It's about how happy Timmy is at this moment. Because when Timmy's happy, everybody's happy. We just happen to be in Walt Disney World. It was kind of like that, because I was just so happy to be there. And of course it was about Disney World. I'm just kidding about that part. Like, to be right there, to be one of the artists. You know, there's artists that have been drawing Mickey Mouse for 75, 80, 90 years. Yeah. To be one of them, just one of them, is such an honor. Ugh, I don't need all the other stuff. Just to be able to do that, just to draw Mickey's face on stage at Walt Disney World, is amazing.
No, and you're right. I think just being able to do that has amazing memories. I remember my wife and I, before we were married, we went to Disney. Now, Disney Quest, if I remember correctly, had the same type of animation academy.
I worked there as well. I did that too.
Now, if I remember correctly, they had a step up. Wasn't it more
it wasn't a step
savvy.
Up. It was not
well,
a step up.
Not a step
it was computers.
Up.
It was easier for you to have it and erase it. It eliminated correct. Paper and pencil.
Which
but that
harder.
Did not make it better.
No, I agree. I thought it was harder. It was more technological. Let me say it that way.
Which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying to like say there's something. But if you're going to be an animator, you're rifling through papers. You're drawing something seven times to get it to move its hand just yes. 2 or 3 inches. So that takes seven, you know, it's 26 frames per second. So you'd have to do 27 drawings for every second of movement. That takes art. You got to study. You got to look. You got to draw. You got to really get into it. Now, on the thing, you can make a line and all. But after a while, it's just really manipulating the tools more than is the heart of the character.
Now, on that same vein, Timmy. Disney is really moving towards, and it's unfair to say Disney, the industry at large is really moving towards not just straight CGI, like a Pixar film, but even in quote-unquote traditionally animated movies, we're seeing more and more of the film being done with a computer. Do you feel that is taking away from the art, or when it's used appropriately, is it enhancing and making the art better, or do you prefer that it just is always 27 drawings for every second?
That is an amazing question. I'm going to give you the sagest answer that I can possibly provide. And that is, from the top of the animation mountain, when you get there and you look down, you see that things grow and grow and grow, and then they reach a plateau. And that's as far as they're going to go. You're going to see CGI and stuff get to a place where it's just so much of the same stuff.
Agreed.
And the people that are doing it, if they don't keep their skills of a crayon and a piece of paper. Remember I told you I went to that school for 4 more years to study life drawing? Well, I have that inside me. What happens when we don't have power?
So that's my follow-up.
We lose power,
question, right?
Let me finish. Yeah. This is really good advice, because the CGI art is so magnificent. It does the best job of helping you escape into the story. So that is always going to be there. But without the people to feed it, the real fine artists to understand that there's another side to that planet and that this ship is going to be blocked by the three suns, so there'll be three shadows. Like, somebody has to know that stuff. So in CGI, we've gotten so far with it. And then what happens when the lights go out, guys? I mean, we've all had a pandemic. Did we ever think Disney World would close? There it was closed for 6 months. So when the lights go out, then what do we do? Somebody's going to still draw the moose on the wall to say that's what we used to eat, you know what I mean, in the caves. There has to be somebody that stays with the art. So I don't like where it's going, but I think the charm is we're losing some charm, and that's where it starts to plateau, because it's really, really clever, but it's missing that fundamental charm that you see in Beauty and the Beast. There's a charm to that movie. There's a charm to Ariel. There's a charm to Snow White that Snow White done now, but by hand would be spectacular. Same movie, done by hand, but now with today's tools. Walt was scrambling to make that movie work, and he did everything he could. If it wasn't for that movie and all the success it had, we might not even be here today. So we owe a lot to Snow White, and that's the truth. And I think that if you're going to redo something, redo it the same way, but with today's artists, give new artists a chance to do her face and do the little squirrels and the bluebirds and all the dwarves. Like, I'd really like to see that be a reimagining of the animation than just let's see how CG real we can get it and then shove it down people's throats and lose the fine art of it. So that's the most sage, non-muggle answer I can give you about CG and hand-drawn animation. If we lose the hand-drawn animation, it won't be long before the other one follows. Sure, we'll have everything on files and stuff, but who's going to draw the new creature?
You say that, but that's actually a huge problem with the early CG stuff is the files were either stored on mediums that are no longer supported, file types no longer supported, right, or just corruption. A lot of the early Pixar we'll never have good quality 4K Blu-rays of it because the original files were lost, and now we're working on the same way we get reprints of old movies. They're having to reshoot off of the films that were sent to the Walt Disney vault in Anaheim. I mean,
if you build a house, you build the foundation out of stone. That's animation by hand. Everything else is on top of that. It's second tier, third tier, fourth tier. But the fundamental foundation of any animated project should start with artists who are fine artists who can draw.
Okay. I agree. Absolutely.
Great point. I agree.
So to say is one better than the other or whatever, I'd like to see what – I'm afraid that we won't have artists good enough to draw like they drew for Snow White because we're so busy with the pointer in our hand, and we're so busy with all these amazing tools that can double and flip and spin and add color and shade. And, you know, if you have to make a decision with a paintbrush, you're stuck with it. With a computer, you hit one button and it's gone. So you can say, I don't like it, don't like it, don't like it. And then you're just scrolling through menus of other people's crap. If you want to paint a background, you pick up a brush and you paint it. That's your heart. That's your soul. That's fine art. That's the difference. Is if we lose that, the other one won't be sure long to follow. Sure, you'll have stuff on files until we lose it, Tim, like you said. But there'll always be like, you know, this, that, and the other thing. People can collage and montage and do whatever they need to do. But if you can't draw me an apple, keep walking. That's on my team. You have to be able to draw an apple.
100% agree with you. You see it in a lot of live action films, right? You know, you look at even the Lord of the Rings films. The first set had a lot of live action props, and then The Hobbit came along. It was very CGI and doesn't look as good, you know. And Jurassic Park. I mean, that's why Jurassic Park still holds up so well.
Yeah,
so
I think they did a great job, and I'm not trying to pull this or plug it in any way, but Pandora, the way when James Cameron made Avatar. The first time you saw that movie, there was something cool about it. Like, there was something where they had the CG just right, you know? A couple Star Wars movies, too, are like that, where they really, really got the CG just right. Like, I'm a big fan of CG, but I'm also a big fan of live movies with animation in them. Like, I love – like, Space Jam would be an example, but I'm not a big – you know, it was okay. I love the Warner Brothers characters. I love Looney Tunes.
Same.
Like, Bugs is my man, you know? I love them guys. But the mixture of the two is a really cool medium. I think when you take live action instead of like CG and in a droid, you actually put in an animation droid or some form of CG animation. Pixar, like bring Pixar in with real life. Like I would love to see that. Pixar has shown it. If you watch the Disney Plus channel, you'll see where they have Pixar in real life, where they bring things. It's a really cool thing. Well, what I'm saying is make a movie where you can combine the two mediums. And I think, I mean, there's no way that it can't be done. It's been done. So, but now we just need a really good story. Like a Goonies, but with some animation.
I'm always down for Goonies. That's right.
Yeah, man.
All right. So let me ask this to me. Is there a certain cartoon or character that pretty much inspires your inspiration style?
You know, that's a great question. But I get asked it an awful lot, but I understand it. If there weren't so many characters, it'd be so easy. But there's so many characters. So I'm going to tell you my character rainbow, basically. It's like Genie, Tigger, Dopey, Thumper, Buzz Lightyear, and Mickey. And in that area, I feel a different mood each day, but it's always one of them. Tinkerbell, I love, but she's Tinkerbell. You know what I mean? Like, she's kind of always on my shoulder. So it's like that kind of thing, you know. But that would be it. Those guys, Dopey, Tigger, Buzz Lightyear. Absolutely, Buzz Lightyear. I love Buzz Lightyear. Tigger, the genie. You know, I like to help other artists and make magic for them. And, like, they don't think they can do this thing or do that thing. And then we show them that they can. And they're like, wow, it's like magic. I'm like, see that? You can do it. Cool. It's so inspiring to get to work with a young artist. So we'll get to that later, I guess.
Yeah. So speaking of that, then, what would you say is the most difficult Disney character to draw?
Well, remember when I said there's a formula? If you follow that, they're all pretty much fall into line. It's just that some of them have a lot more S curls. It's a line that goes in two directions, like the letter S. So In animation, you'll find there's S curves and things. The Beast and the hair on his face and around his neck, to me, is one of the most tedious. It's like it's hard because it's so much. Yeah. Like there's levels of beard. There's levels of mustache. There's levels of... Like, it's not just one thing of hair. And so if you're not careful when you're really studying it, and I'm telling you, in animation, we get to go to the vault, which means you wear white gloves and you open up the drawers and you pull them out and you get to page through the original drawings.
Oh, wow.
The Beast and Lilo and Stitch and the 101 Dalmatians and the Rescuers Down Under. It is so amazing. It's in this, like, hyper, Not hermetically sealed, but it's like it's climate controlled down to like 58 degrees at all times. So you're chilly in there all the time. So there's no humidity at all. And that was a real thrill. Like I don't even put that in the book. I'm glad that I got to tell you guys that's something cool.
That is cool. Sorry. So before we transition over to Attracted, one last question I want to ask you for animation. Your journey through animation is obviously been a very significant part of your life.
Yeah.
What has it taught you from drawing these cartoon characters? What has it taught you in life? How did you bring that back to everyday life with your family, your friends? Just
that's a great question.
Experience.
Man, you guys are into this. You come up with some really good questions. I can see why you've been successful at this. Let's hope that more people listen because with questions like that, if you ask all your guests questions like this, you're going to do really well. Okay. I think I'd have to tell you what animation taught me is that every cliche in the world has a basis in fact. And that is, if you work hard at something, it'll be it. You can do more than you think you can. If you believe in yourself, it can work. All those things that you think are cliche, they really are true. That's why they're cliche. Because if you really work hard at something, you can do it. And in animation, I'd see a little kid who never drew anything ever before. And just with a little encouragement and being the center of attention for 5 minutes, the little kid is so scared that, but he trusts me because I have that name tag that says Timmy. So just because I was a cast member, not because I was an artist, but because I was a cast member, I was very approachable. It showed me that he did it. He would draw it. It showed me that if that little kid can draw when he doesn't think he can, then maybe you can fight cancer. Maybe you can battle this or battle that. There's real serious things in life. So animation taught me that you can do a lot more than you think you can if you're just willing to try and you have someone to support you. You could do anything you want in life. You just need those things. You need to believe it.
Yep.
Work hard and have somebody support you. Yeah.
That's a great answer. I love that.
It's long-winded, I know, but I felt that it was worth it. I'm
sorry.
It's
not at all.
That.
So I want to slowly transition into your really attraction Imagineering work. And before we get into the story of how that happened, I just want to mention a few attractions that our listeners will be familiar with that you worked on. And if I'm incorrect in any of them, please correct me. But
sure.
So Pandora, World of Avatar, Cinderella's Castle, Agrabah in Adventureland, Main Street USA, Frozen Ever After, the Norway Pavilion, Polynesian Village Resort Pool and Trader Sam's Grotto and Tiki Bar, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, including Diagon Alley and Hagrid's Magical Motorbike Adventure, Fast and Furious Supercharge, and Skull Island, Reign of Khan, just to name a few, Timmy, right? Just a few.
Just to name a few.
Just to name a few. So these are some huge, big tickety item attractions here that I want to talk about and learn about this. But I guess the first question for you is here, you were an animator your whole life. How did you transition and what was the process of going from animation really into more Imagineering and attraction development?
That's a great question, man. You guys are good at this. Okay, so the truth is I'm an artist, but I'm a Renaissance artist. I can sculpt, I can paint, I can draw, I can sketch, I can render, I can airbrush, I can make ceramics, I can... So So animation is just one version of art. And when you study something, you learn that it has many facets to it. So animation, I was an animator because I wanted to be able to teach animation characters to people. I wanted that job. But the whole time I was painting murals before I did that. So I was always had a brush in my hand. I was painting. They didn't know that at Disney. They just thought, oh, he came through animation. He went to NFL Films, animated a football game, and he belongs here. The truth is, I just really wanted that job because I just couldn't see not being there and not doing that. I felt a real connection to that class. And as it turns out, I won all these awards. They had me in the eyes and ears. I'm the only person in Hollywood Studios who was ever in the eyes and ears, that publication. They had a full page ad. Since then, they have been. But when I was there, the animation that part of the Hollywood Studios, the animation courtyard, never had any attention. It had a lot of attention for the shows that were great, but it never got in-house attention. And now the whole planet of Disney Worlds, the ones in China, the ones in France, get this publication. So the eyes and ears is a big deal. And to be the one who was the spotlight of it was really kind of special. So back to attractions. Being able to paint and draw is all you really need. If you can do those two things, you can do animation and you can do Imagineering. But with an engineering background too, it really helped with Imagineering. So I guess I was a confluence of a bunch of storms from studying and going to school and then just having the courage to try it. But I was like in my 30s when I started. So I was pretty much, I had two kids and I was married. I knew kind of a little bit enough about life where I wasn't just starting out right out of school, because my school never really ended. I'm still learning every day, the truth be told. But that's the thing. So for me personally, I'm a fine artist, so I could do anything. If you just give me the right stuff, I can put together anything for you.
In that same vein, in my research for getting ready for this week, have you mainly done like scenic painting type stuff for the attractions you worked on, or concept art?
Right.
A little birdie told me that you referred to yourself as a Renaissance artist, that you may have experience with trompe l'oeil.
Yeah. So they're great questions. Great research. So lead me back. There was about three questions in there.
Has been your primary area of responsibility in Imagineering, in attraction design?
Okay, so I'm going to lay it out for you and all your audience. You understand it. There's hundreds of people that make these attractions. I was one person. I fell into it at the end, though. When you want it to look good, that's when it comes to the scenic artist. So we will take concrete and shape it to look like a tree or a rock or a piece of wood or a house. Everything you see, we took tools and we carved it to look like that, and then we painted it. So when it's done, then they look through and say, oh, but the light this or the light that, and we go through what it looks like, and then we go ahead and do it. So the concept idea, that happens before me. The concept, what do we have the space for? What can we do? What are the demographics? That's a lot of computer work, really, I would think, to do a lot of research and figure all that stuff out. Then the concept of it, they'll go to the movie. Like if it's about a movie, they'll go to the movie. They'll go to whatever artist were part of that to get the real feel for it. And then they put it on paper. So now I have a 2D design of it. Then we'll have a bunch of artists, and here's where my team would get into it. We'd take foam and different things and make a model of the drawing. And then the model, then we start to break earth. Then we go and we build it. We put down the iron. We put down the foundations. We put down the plumbing and the electricity. And we build with scaffolding up. And then that's my point, is from the paper to you walking into it. Up to the paper, that's the Imagineers that are behind the finances of it and the supplies that it's going to take and, how long it should take and the manpower. I'm not interested in any of that, honestly. I want to create, So, and it's all part of creation, but I want to be out there where I have my hands on the paint. I want to be the last person to touch it. So that's me inside me. I want to finish that thing and bring it to them. So we try to bring it exactly as the model, but there's going to be little discrepancies sometimes. But you can't, sacrifice safety. And if you just stay as close as possible with a series of approvals, little tiny things will change. But sometimes, and more times than not, they're happy actions. They happen for the better. So we just move and flow and do that harmonious thing that I talked about earlier, where everybody kind of knows their part and then helps each other along. It's team art. So for me to sit here and say, I did this and I did that, that wouldn't be accurate at all. I was just one part of it. Now, in Pandora, my responsibility was the vines and the rocks and the moss, kind of, along with a few other people that were really talented too. I'll never forget them. You know, they're like my best friends.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's awesome.
And in that same vein, what is the path? I assume that everyone who works on attraction is not an Imagineer. So what is the path from somebody who works on an attraction in an artistic or engineering capacity from that to becoming a full-blown engineer and getting that special hard hat and getting that coveted title of being one of these people that make the magic for all of us?
Well, I got to tell you, it's what I wanted, but I never imagined it would happen, because it happened as magically as you can imagine for me. For other people, there's a path. You'll go to school, you'll fill out the applications, you'll try, you'll hope, you'll wish, you'll pray, and you hope that it happens. I just went and got it. I didn't go through any of that. I just said, I want to be in the right place when they make this decision. And I just was. It just worked out. That's why I wrote a book, because for me, it was a really different path than most people. I didn't go the traditional way because I had started life later and went through animation first. I never really even dreamed of going back for Imagineering. And, you know, and then just different people were influences on me. And I said, you know what? Why not try it? I did it once. Let's try it again. Like in the book, there's a part where it all fell apart. You know, my family life kind of went through some rough stuff. So I had to set aside things to be a dad. And then when my kids got a little older, they're like, we really missed Disney. Could you go back and do it again? And I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, so to go back then and then climb that whole path to become an Imagineer was my own individual path. It was so miraculous and it should have never worked. But I did have the qualifications and I did have the gifts and the talents had pulled off. All I needed was the courage to try. And that's what the book's about, because everybody, I'm not different than anyone else. If you have the courage to go try it and you believe in it, it can work. Both of you sitting here looking at me might have something in your heart that you really want to do. Like you want to race hot air balloons, or you want to kayak some great, go do it. You got one life, man. And if you could just, when you get there, I got to tell you, that feeling I had when I held my helmet finally, man, I cried. I'm a grown man. I cried my eyes out.
Well, that was going to be my question. A couple. Do you mind telling our listeners the story of how you got your hard hat?
Oh, I don't mind at all. No, I like your listeners. Your listeners are tuned in. Let's give them something worth listening for. So I swear I'm not making this up to you. That's why I wrote a book. All right. My birthday, October 25th, seems to be really magical. It's the day, you know, I was born. And then 5 years later, they named Walt Disney World after it on that day of all days. They just picked that day, I guess. I don't know. Because the first, October 1st, they actually kind of opened the Magic Kingdom. But they didn't name the place knowing that Epcot was coming and Animal Kingdom and all that stuff. But they just wanted to call it Walt Disney World. So that's my birthday. Then on, I think it was like my, I don't know, maybe my 36th. I don't know what birthday it was. But on my birthday, I became an Animation Academy instructor, and animation artist for Walt Disney World. On my birthday, the same day that the park was named as Walt. And then, of course, they did. Disney found out, and they gave me my helmet on my birthday years later. So October 25th has been a real special day for me. That's how I got my helmet on my birthday. I wasn't expecting it. I knew it would be coming in, but it might have come a week sooner, and they just didn't give it to me because they wanted to wait. And the head of Walt Disney World, you know, Imagineering worldwide, like the global art director, gave it to me, and his name is Schultz, and he's just the greatest guy. And I was talking when he said my name. I didn't even, because there's a room full of like 50 Imagineers. And when he said, hey, all right, I want everybody's attention, you know, we're still talking. We're like, you know, I'm 30 feet away from him. But then he said, I want to say happy birthday. And then he said it, and I realized, wow, it is my birthday. And then he pulls out this box. And it's just this unlabeled brown box, right? And he just opens it, and he pulls out the most beautiful, shiny helmet. Oh, I didn't want to wear it because I'd get paint on it and moss on it and every living thing that's in Pandora on it. And it doesn't come off. I'm using stuff that's supposed to last 100 years. So, but I had to do it. I had to get street cred, as Vest would tell us. He's like, don't worry about your helmets. You know, it's street cred. I'm like, No, it's not. It's gross. Because it was so pretty. You guys could see it right here.
I was just going to say, for our listeners who this is not a video podcast, but in the background, behind Timmy there is that fabled Imagineer helmet, and it appears to be on top of a bust of Walt.
Yeah,
is that a bust of Walt? Yes.
Yeah.
So that is magical.
And I don't know if you can see this, and it's going to look really nondescript and really unimportant, but this right here, I'll see if – I don't know how to show it to you.
We're missing the camera.
Okay. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's just – you know what this is?
What's that, a stamp? Or?
It's a stamp.
It looks like a date stamp.
It is a date stamp, but you know, it says copyright Disney. And you have to be an animation artist to get one of these. You can't just walk into a store and get a copyright Disney stamp. You have to earn that by drawing. So this and that helmet are two of the most amazing things that could happen to a human being. You know, so I'm really proud of them both. And I've never shown anybody that stamp before. It was given to me from another animation artist who left to go help the unions, to help all the cast members. Like, he really believed in what they did. When they moved animation to California and shut it down, now they're bringing Imagineering back. I think they're going to open up another academy again. It's just a hunch.
That would, that would be something. I mean, the spirit of the Animation Academy does live on the cruise lines. There's a smaller version of it. Yep. And then there's also a much smaller version of the experience at Rafiki's Planet Watch. You can go up there and, you know, draw the Lion King characters, the Pocahontas characters, and the Fab Five with an animation artist who probably was very similar to Timmy Britt at the beginning of his career. Now, this is a laundry list of attractions that you've worked on, and obviously you've talked a little bit about Pandora, but what was your personal favorite to work on, Disney or Universal? I mean, we talk about Universal on this podcast as well.
I got to say, there's moments of Frozen that were so amazing for me. Being so high up above Spaceship Earth in the middle of the night and then watching them rotate the lights just to make sure they work. So I would see the ball turn colors that nobody would ever see for different variations of time. And they try like checkered patterns and do all kinds of fun stuff with it. But it was just me, my buddy in the basket, 120 feet up in this dark, like it was so dark. And then the lights would come on. And I've told this before, but it's that in Frozen, that was a really amazing moment. That and this little tiny frog, man, he was no bigger than my finger, my tiny little finger. He was so small, but he stood up to me, man. He wasn't letting me paint his house. Like, that was a cool experience. So Frozen, there was an experience there. I'd have to say a lot of the Universal stuff was really cool, guys. I know this is a Disney podcast, but I did a lot of really cool Universal stuff too. But being behind the scrim on the Main Street while there's guests just on the other side. Now, a scrim, if you don't know for your audience, it's a thin sheet that is exactly a photograph of the thing that it's in front of. So like if you had a building that you were working on the facade, but people are going to take pictures, you'd have to put a piece in front of it so their pictures would still match up with what it was supposed to be. But it's just a thin sheet of screen. So, and the guests had to actually walk like under scaffolding at this one point. We were working on them on Main Street. And I'll never forget, we're back there and the guests can hear us. So we have to be so quiet and we're being as quiet as we can. And then the parade would happen. And as soon as the parade would happen, there'd be people with like nail guns and like jackhammers and like saws. And I'm like, this is too much, man. Because it was early on in my scenic career. See, in scenic work, when you paint a mural, it's a flat wall. So you got to add the dimension, like trompe l'oeil. Like you said, you mentioned trompe l'oeil. So I'll swing back around and cover this for you. Trompe l'oeil is the illusion of light. It's the trickery of your eye. So you can think like you walk over and just pick something up. But really, it's just a painting. Like, it's really beautiful. Or a door that looks open to a place that you can't possibly go because it's just a wall. Like, Roadrunner drives a truck into – or not Roadrunner, but Wile E. Coyote would drive a truck into the wall. Well, that's what trompe l'oeil is like. So that's a mural. In scenic work, you get to build it for real. So there's a difference in walking in a room with a wall and then walking in a room – with a real hand coming out of the wall, and in that hand is like a crystal ball, and in that crystal ball is a video. That's Imagineering. So it's taking murals and props and 3D sculptures and putting it all together. So you really do have to kind of know your stuff about it. But once people can show you, and if you're creative, you could really make a great living at doing scenic work. It's fantastic. And the artists never really get credit for it. If it wasn't for the pandemic, I'd still be there. But I left to go write this book. And in the process, all these podcasts happened. And now I'm on the radio. And I'm going to be at the Comic-Con. And it just snowballed into this amazing, real fun. I'm so grateful for it. But I get to tell people and share it and teach people how to draw. All my fundamental learning has given me the ability to show anyone of any age between the class and the Imagineering now that I can teach you how to draw. Like Catherine has been able to draw amazing stuff just from me showing her and helping her. But she's doing the work, but I'm showing her how to look at it a different way. Like, hey, try looking at it like this. And then just watch and trust yourself. Draw really light. You can always grow later, you know. So things like that, real fundamentals, they work. That's why I say, you know, people say, oh, that's a cliche. Well, cliches sometimes are based in real facts. And I'm here to tell you that's true. Like if you work hard, you know, good things will happen. Well, that's a true fact. That's a true statement.
So I just got to ask for me and for listeners, I'm sure it's a good story. I'm a tiki nut. And, yeah. And you worked on not only Trader Sam's, which even for non-Disney fans who are just fans of tiki, that's one of the like most beloved bars yeah. of tiki revival, and Jock Lindsey's Hangar Bar, which yeah. is another hot spot for so the whole.
Lucky. I know. See what I mean? I'm just the luckiest person. So they were two completely different jobs. The one job, the one in the Polynesian, was just me. I did the painting there. All the props and stuff, they were being put in at the same time. In that little room, it's really not as big as you think it is. So, like, there's a long line because it can only hold basically so many people in that place. But the little show they put on with the volcano, it's so much fun. It's really charming. So to be able to do that artwork while they were doing that was actually – probably what got me my last tick on the box to become an Imagineer. When Colleen Meyer saw that, I think she said, all right, we got Pandora coming up and I want this guy on our team. But
so
never
you did
said
all the paintings like where the volcano is and the
everything
shadows.
Everything on the walls that you see, I painted. And then if they hung something up, well, that would be a prop. But behind that, like I did an entire wall of bamboo shades. Like imagine Venetian blinds, but made of bamboo. And they're, you know, 30 feet tall by 35 feet wide. And I'm just on a ladder with a paintbrush. But it had to look like bamboo, little strips of bamboo, yeah. bamboo wow. to make. Yeah. But there had to be a color behind that. So the areas between the bamboo, you'd see that too. So it starts with a mural. Then it starts with a little trompe l'oeil. And then there's another wall where I had to do a lot of abstract stuff. But in that room, I'm there with the Imagineers that are the ones like I'm a scenic Imagineer, there'd be Imagineers that are animatronics who to me are awesome. They're the robot guys. So they're in there making things move and stuff. And just what a thrill. But when I'm painting, they just stop to watch. Cause now here's somebody on a ladder with two hands going and two different colors going at the same time.
You can paint both handed.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's incredible. Awesome.
That is.
Are you kidding me? You have to. If you paint with one hand, you're not going to be able to use that hand later on in life. You have to give that hand a break. You're constantly moving. I'm spraying with both hands. I'm doing it all with both hands. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
That is incredible.
But you have to. If you want to be an Imagineer, you've got to learn to paint with both
hands. It made sense now that you say it. That's one of the things people, I think, just take for granted or don't even think about.
These 4-inch brushes get heavy, believe it or not. Yeah. And sometimes you have to tape two of them together to get a wider brush. Well, you dip that in paint and you do this all day for 8 hours. You saw how your shoulder feels. No, neither can I. It's why I learned to do it with my left hand. I learned out of necessity. I'm not some super genius guy. I just learned because I had to. If you want to keep up and get ahead, you got to do everything it takes. Yeah. That's the truth about anything in life. And so in animation and Imagineering, yeah, you get up an extra half hour, then you get up an extra half hour. It's the price of doing business. I can't guarantee that everybody would get an Imagineering helmet. I'm not saying that. But in your own life, there's that same thing that would be that for you. Sure, I studied and I did the practice and I did the work. And so I guess it kind of makes sense that I had some success at it. But what if I wanted to raise sheep? There's somebody who can raise sheep, like down to a science, man. Like whatever it is that is in your heart, do it the same way and get your own Imagineering helmet in life, in whatever. Like if it's raising sheep or making candles or doing whatever it is, just give everything you have and watch what happens. And then once you get there, you reach back and you help other people. You pull them up. And that's what I've been doing since, is helping other people. That's really the meat of what I do, is try to get people together with other companies so that they can start painting in the scenic work. Because there's so many talent artists out there that just they never get a break. And I was that guy many times, you know, and I knew what it took. And I had all the education. It still was impossible. So now that I'm at this place and I have lots of cool friends and people I can call favors and make connections, I do that. I spend time finding artists that are in college, just get out or whatever, or artists that have been trying, just had no luck. We give them a great portfolio review and we send them off. And I do this for free. I do this because I love art and I believe in it. It's not something I charge for. So I help a lot of people. Yeah.
So one more attractions question before we move on. And this is a fun one. Did any of your Imagineering attractions work feature hidden Mickeys, and if a bunch of it did, what's your favorite or the coolest hidden Mickey that maybe our listeners have no idea it even exists?
You gotta, Tim, before you tell it, you gotta. We had Steve Barrett, the hidden Mickey guy.
Yeah, we did have the hidden Mickey guy on the show.
So you gotta trump his stories. Let's hear it.
All right. Well, I can only tell you what really happened. So, on Pandora, James Cameron was really strict about keeping it Pandora. There's no Disney on Pandora. That's just the way he wanted it, and we agreed with that. It was a symbiotic, meaningful relationship with the land and the people, and there was no time for Mickey Mouse. But me and Walt didn't see it that way. I got to tell you the truth, because if you look really close, how we built the floating mountains, there's these weirs. They're called weirs, okay? W-E-I-R, I believe. And they collect – it's a basin. It's a basin. It collects water, and then it just – we have it sculpted so that the water lifts up to the edge and then just pours out into the next one. That one fills up, and then we direct where the water pours out of that one. So we can cascade waterfalls checkered down this mountain by filling little weirs and dropping them down, having pumps and all that. So it's really an amazing system. But before the weirs were filled with water, they were empty. And knowing that nobody would ever see them, and knowing that I wasn't allowed to do anything Mickey that the guests could see, I had this concrete area that I took a ladder and went all the way down. And it was really carved, really intricate, but it was only to hold water, nothing else. Nobody's ever going to see it. It's 75 feet above the ground. You'd never get up there anyway. And it's filled with, you know, hundreds of gallons of water. But I got spray paint and I went down there. I was an Imagineer, man. I was doing it, you know. I'm telling you, there's other people who have hit their initials and done all kinds of things, but this is my story. I went down there real big, man. I just made the greatest hidden Mickey ever. It's so hidden, nobody will ever find it, but I promise you it's there. If you drain those things or they tear that down 100 years from now, they're going to see it, man, and they're going to know. And I represent it for Walt and for Mickey and for every Imagineer out there.
That's awesome.
So that's my little – that's my favorite hidden
that
Mickey
is,
story.
That is very hidden Mickey and a very cool one that I bet you does not make it into Steve Barrett's yellow book.
Nope.
Maybe he'll listen to this podcast and add it to the 2022 we'll edition.
Up. Yeah, we'll just call him up.
Yeah, it's there, Steve. That's awesome. So we're not close to wrapping up quite yet, but we want to talk a little bit about your book one more time. I think you kind of told us a little bit of how it got going, but if we didn't put Catherine to sleep and she's still over there.
No, I'm still here.
All right, good. So I guess I have a couple questions for you too, and Timmy can interject as well, but what was it like to take Timmy's story and really put it into words? I mean, obviously, just speaking with Timmy for the last hour, a fascinating storyteller. Was it a challenge, or what was it, you know, what was it like?
Oh boy.
It really was. And we started doing it when he was in Orlando and I was in Dallas. We were trying to do it by phone. I would record his stories and try to transcribe them. It was just a really bulky, difficult process. And we had a few good chapters, but it wasn't going anywhere. And so when COVID shut the parks down, I suggested that he come to Dallas and we could get this book finished. And we did. And the way we did it was he would tell his story into a recorder, and I would use Microsoft Word 365, which will – the microphone will just print the words out on the page, but with no punctuation, no paragraph breaks. It was really hard to read. So I would send it to someone who would put it into paragraph form for me, and then I would go and write it. But the challenging thing is, as you've noticed, Timmy gets really excited about stuff that he says, and he'll start on one topic, and the next thing you know, he'll be telling this fantastic story that goes somewhere else in the book.
Yeah.
And so after I've got hundreds of hours of him talking, and it was after a while, it was hard to keep it all in my head. And so the challenge was to find the story that he's trying to tell and then separate out the other story. And then when he comes back and tells that original story and some other narrative that he's doing, to be able to put it back in there. And that was very challenging.
Oh, come on. That's not what they want to hear. They want to hear about the fights and stuff.
The question says, what was the most challenging? The other challenging thing is Timmy is a team artist. He does everything with other people. I am a solo writer. And so we did have some conflict there because I can't think if someone else is giving me input. And so, and especially with all of the complicated narratives he was giving me, I had to hide out and put earplugs in and just pretend I was the only person in the world to do this.
The best part for me was these are amazing stories that you can't really believe. She went back and fact checked them. So when she come back to me and go, so that really did happen. I said, I told you. So that really did happen. I'm like, see, I told you that too. Like, yeah. I'm like, why didn't you believe me? After a while, she started believing me, but she still fact checked everything.
I believe you.
So you're saying Catherine climbed into Pandora and looked for the hidden Mickey.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but that's a good –
Do you think she rode up on one of the pelicans, or was there a banshee available on that day?
All I can say is you have to drain that to prove that. But everything else that I said, she fact checked with the people and the things and the places that I did, which validated me, because if you look at the cover of the book – it's the silhouette of Walt's head with fireworks in the background. That's really what it is. It's Walt looking off, making his last wish that someone would come along and just take the spirit of the heart of what he was trying to do and share it with the guests and keep the magic going. Because he knew his time was over. He was gone 2 months later, but that night he made that wish. I really feel like that's the same night that I guess I was supposed to be born, because I feel like that was October 25th, because it seemed like every birthday after that I'd make a wish and it would come true. I've wished for so many amazing things that have happened, and it's not me. I know it's not me. I'm not some special person. I just am very observant. So when I tell you that if you make a wish on something and it's a doable wish, don't be surprised if it comes true. I mean, it's a magical universe. It really is a wonderful world out there. And when you embrace it and give yourself to it and add to it and share, like wake up every day and say, you know, I'm really grateful for today. Well, how can I show that by serving someone else? If you just wake up and do that, like 23 days in a row, I think is the amount to train the human brain to reschedule itself to do something. Like, so if you have a habit you want to break, you got to not do it for 22 days. So drinking, smoking, anything, try it not for 22 days and see if it doesn't work. Make me a liar. Show me, Timmy, I tried. You know, you'll find that you probably didn't really do it. But if you do it, usually you get used to it. So what I'm saying is if you wake up every day and say, just wake up grateful. Just wake up grateful and then go serve someone, go help someone, make a phone call your mom, tell her you love her. That's all. Do those two things every day. Just do one thing for someone else and wake up grateful and just watch. Just make a liar out of me. Watch if your life doesn't start to take on a better path. You'll find that things start coming back to you that you never thought before, but now they've picked up momentum. So you did something nice for someone, and it was a selfless gesture. Well, that went out into the universe and it picks up momentum. And when it circles back and hits you like a train, now all of a sudden you just won the lottery. You know, something great just happened to you. So it kind of works in that way with energy in the world. And all the Imagineers understand this, that it's about giving. It's about being part of it. It's about loving your craft and understanding what you're doing and then sharing it for the world. We don't get to sign the work in Imagineering. You don't see anyone's name on it, you know, because we don't want that. I didn't do it. I was a part of it.
That's true.
But I wanted to be a part of it. So to be able to talk about it now, I haven't really broken any magical things. It's nothing that you don't really know. I'm just telling you from my perspective how amazing. Like if you think Imagineering is cool, it's 10 times cooler. If you think animation was cool, yeah, it's 10 times cooler. And I got so lucky. Really, that's the truth. I just got really lucky to do those things. It wasn't anything about me that made it better. I just embraced what I had and went with it. And I really encourage people to do that. That's what the book's about.
Yeah.
Being your best version of yourself and just going for it. And I had to face adversity. If you read the book, there's some parts that are pretty dark.
Yeah.
And that was hard to write. That was very hard to write.
You know, and I think you guys both did an amazing job of telling the story, right? You can see Timmy's, you know, passion and kindness and even humor come out in the book in a very unique and fun way to read, right? As well as I don't know whose idea it was, but I love the idea of the shorter chapters, right? When you look at it and you see like, 40-something chapters, that's crazy. But no, it actually does the opposite. It makes it into more of a short story type fictional book, which is easier to read for one.
With pictures!
With Can pictures!
And the pictures are amazing.
Amazing animation, yeah.
Well, let me say something about the chapters. That was kind of a happy accident. When we first started writing, I had no idea how long the book was going to be. I knew he had some fabulous stories, and he's an amazing storyteller. And it really was a great privilege to be able to work on this. When I say it was challenging, it was just because there was so much. And you know, it had to be transcribed. And you can't just take a transcription and write it for word for word and make it book. It has to be – it's a completely different style. And I worked really hard to make it sound like Timmy's voice as I wrote it. But as I started putting the chapters together, there we didn't go in order, and I started noticing that they averaged 8 to 12 pages, and I started thinking, well, if this book is going to be as long as I think it is, I tried to keep the chapters about the same size so that it wouldn't be overwhelming to people. But really, what it came down to was he had a story to tell, and he told it, and each chapter was one of those stories. So you can read it a chapter at a time, and a lot of the chapters stand alone. And so it just mm-hmm. the structure of his story lent itself to that. And by the time I got to the end, I was actually counting pages, saying I don't want to go over 10 or 12. And so I'd go back. If one was really short, I'd go back and put another story in it. And if one was way too long, the Pandora, I had to break it into three chapters. Mm-hmm. But I did that on purpose because I wanted it to be accessible to everybody, because every story is just so inspiring. And
can I jump in here? Wonderful. Can I just say something?
Mm-hmm.
I think a collection of chronological stories to tell a tale that is so unbelievable that it had to be told. That's all we did. We just took, you know, the story about Hashi, my first friend when I was 5 years old. And then, you know, then the trouble with my family, then, you know, how I responded to that. But little by little, it shows you the step process of how it always turned around to be something good in the end. And then it even ended, even with a pandemic, off I ride into the Texas sunset. And so there's always hope in my book, even at the very, you know, there's parts in the book where I was really contemplating ending it all. Like, there was one part of my life that was so bad, I just couldn't deal with it anymore. You can't go from one extreme to the other without really feeling it. And it takes a while. And then when it creeps up on you, man. So there's that. But there's people out there that are reading that might be at that right, that place in their life. And so my hope is that the book changes their mind and they, you know, they do what I did. And I would have never become an Imagineer if I would have followed through and ran my car into that tree, my poor car. But there's real life in it and there's real stories in it. So I didn't want it to just be this magical Cinderella fireworks and balloons. You know, you can get that anywhere. I wanted to get right down into it and say, look, this is how it went down. And this is how it went down. And this is how it went down. So you go on the journey with me. Like, I cried. Yeah. I was scared. I was frightened. I was worried. I lost a lot, you know, and I share it with everybody. So that's what's in the book, too, is that if your life is not perfect, this is the book for you, because neither was mine.
Yeah,
but I didn't give up. And that's where we're at.
And that's what you said, you know. It was
also a happy accident that the story of his life followed the classic pattern for a good book. There's it builds up to a climax, and then there's, you know,
tragedy and villains. Yeah.
Then you the recovery, and I mean, it just magically fit the formula. So that part of it was easy, but it was such an amazing story. It was really a privilege to be part of it.
It really is, and I think that's what makes it so fun. It is so real. It's so down to earth. It's so relatable in certain aspects, like you said, whether it's herding sheep or making soap, like you said. So let me ask you both this question: would you ever do it again?
Well, I've written, this is my second book, and after my first one, it was a small Christian novel that was published in 1994, 1 month before my first child was born, so I didn't write again for a long time, and I thought that was my last book. I did not intend to write again, but when this came up, I just had to be a part of it. So in order to do it again, it would have to be something pretty incredible. I'm trained as a therapist. That's what I do in real life, and I would do it again, but it would have to be something truly amazing, like Timmy's story.
Me, I did it. I'm not doing it again. No way. I want to move on and build something else. She can sit and say she might do it again. Would I write another book with Catherine? Absolutely. She's seriously, magic never had a better friend. She's the hat to the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Seriously, she put those quotes in there to match the chapter, to match the artwork. Like, she really fundamentally structured that book. So when I hand it to you, you got your money's worth. You got a great chapter after chapter, great artwork, real well thought out, really spaced nicely. She did a great job.
I agree.
I would absolutely do a book with her again. But would I ever do it again? No, I want to write a movie. I want to write a movie for Pixar. That's my next goal.
Wow. Good luck. That's awesome. That would be amazing. So speaking of that, that's a big segue into our last question for you, Timmy, is what's your next adventure? What's your next project?
That's a great question.
You know,
so with the book being so successful and really being going out the way it is, it's taken on a life of its own and sucked me into it. So now I'm going to promotions everywhere, and I'm going to the Comic-Con, and I have, you know, I'm a guest speaker here, and I'm teaching classes there. So I have my own kind of little bit of, you know, book responsibility here. I have to, we sat for 2 years and wrote a book. Now I have to go out and let people know it's out here. Yep. So that's what I'm going to do for now. But Six Flags, Universal, Disney, if they ever called me and said, hey, we have this project, we could use your help, or would you train the artists to do this? I would love to hear whatever they have to say. I'm not opposed to ever working for them again or anything. I think with all the Imagineers coming to Florida now, there's going to be stuff that's just a mess for a while until they get it all worked out. And then I think within a year or so, maybe then I'll be ready to stop, to get off the road and go back to build another attraction. If I had to build another attraction of something I liked, I think of a movie that would be great. I don't know. There's so many, but I'm more of a classical guy. Like, I'd like to do, I don't know. I want to say, I hate to say this, but How to Train Your Dragons, I think Universal has. I would love to be a part of that.
That's somehow. The rumor, right? Epic Universe.
Yeah. So that's what I'm getting artists now and kind of getting them ready to go fill in some of the spots there when they need
that's
them.
Cool.
So that's, you know, so that's a big thrill watching people start scenic work for the first time. They're fresh out of art school. They never did it before. Now I got them like with a brush in their hand and a bottle in their hand, and I'm teaching them how to do it. Like, that was really cool. And then watching them become art directors. Like, I've helped people grow in their career, and now to watch them fully become who they're supposed to be is just amazing. It's better than anything else. Sitting back watching someone else reach a dream that you knew that you opened this door or helped them or kind of coached them along, and then they make it. Oh, it's amazing. It's so rewarding. Yeah. I'm real lucky.
That's awesome. Lucky. No, it is. It's and it's all amazing. So the last section here, we have rapid fire questions for you.
Oh, boy.
And Timmy, I think this is going to be the hardest for you because we're looking for quick questions, quick answers.
All right.
For
all
both
right.
You and Catherine. Catherine, you're definitely in on this too. So
hey, wait. Okay. Thank you both for staying up and doing this with me because
you
probably
problem.
Do podcasts. You've been doing them for every week for 2 years. You've done a lot of podcasts. We haven't come across someone like me before. I'm pretty sure that I kind of am a lot. And, you know, that's kind of the extra part, too.
You're definitely keeping us on your toes, but it's been a blast. It's been awesome.
Okay,
and, so let's
I want to say thank you
for putting up with fires.
Rapid fire. All right, so rapid fire. I'm gonna start off with off-the-cuff question I just came up with because we have a Disney Imagineer on our podcast, and I have to ask, is Coco ever coming to the Mexican Pavilion?
Oh, what a great question. I have no knowledge of it, but if your audience can see me winking, I
have
no
winking
knowledge
audience
of it.
Again. They don't see the video, Timmy, but yeah.
Just that. I figured you worked it on Frozen and Maelstrom. Just had to ask. Okay, so here's the real rapid fire question. Disney or Universal?
Oh, okay. You know, that's not fair, really, because Walt went with me all over to Universal. When I did all that Diagon Alley, I did everything for Diagon Alley. Then Hagrid's, we won Roller Coaster of the Year. I did the giant mural there. Amazing career at Universal as well. But I just got done telling you, I got the helmet on my birthday. I got the stamper on my birthday. I was there when it opened on my birthday. And, you know, if I had to choose Disney, that's your quick answer. But they are two sides of the same coin in my heart. One is cool. One is fun. I don't know where the line is. So there you have it. That's the best answer I could give.
That's all right. That's fine. Catherine, same question.
Disney or Universal? I've only been to Universal for one day. But I loved the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. But I also love Disney. And they like you said, it's two sides of the same coin. Disney is classic. Universal is cool. I mean, it just I'd pay money to go
they
back.
They complement each other so well. It's a great question, but they really do complement each other.
All right, next question. Favorite attraction? Doesn't it have to be one you worked on. Just your favorite attraction to go on in the parks, Disney or Universal, whichever you pick. Favorite or Six Flags, Cedar Point, wherever. Your favorite theme park attraction in the world.
Well, before they took it away, the Animation Academy was my favorite.
Because.
My scrapbook had one page for every attraction. Timmy's attraction had 6 pages.
Wow. She really did come to every class I had, basically, and drew every character. So I remembered her name because she was in my job every day for a week, you know, strolling with me.
But now that it's gone, the Flight of Passage.
Oh, that is an amazing ride. Oh, my God. I love the Haunted Mansion. I'm going to stay loyal to it. Walt never got to ride it. There was a big hubbubaloo when it was built because one guy was really about like scary stuff and one guy was about humor. These are the two first of the two Imagineers, really. And when they built this, they couldn't, and they put it on hold. And then they finally said, well, why don't we just let them both do it? And that's what happened. And I love it. And it was one of the first attractions I went to as a little kid. So you can't tell me those 999 ghosts aren't real. I believe they're real. So I love the Mansion.
All right, next one for you, Timmy. If you could design any attraction based on any film or franchise, what would it be?
I think that we lost a lot in The Wizard of Oz, and I think if we could get The Wizard of Oz back, what a journey. A girl, her three buddies, she's in this other place, the tornado takes her, they go through all these adventures, they come back, Frank L. Baum and the Oz series. I'd love to see that done through Disney or Universal somewhere in an attraction. That's my answer.
All right.
Yeah. Kath?
And The Princess Bride.
Oh, that's an amazing answer,
Catherine.
I cannot tell you. I've probably
that might
seen
be
that
the
movie.
Answer of the night. Yeah,
I probably have seen that movie 250 times. I can recite the whole thing. I don't know what they do with it, but that's what I'd suggest.
Well, then I want to make an attraction for the Holy Grail. Man, I love my path on the Holy Grail.
We're just on and on all night.
All right, thrill rides or slow rides?
I'm a thrill ride guy. That's an easy answer for me.
Thrill.
All right. Thrill and thrill.
All right. Favorite place to eat on Walt Disney World property?
Well, I haven't been to a lot of them. I've only had that one really good long trip with my family in 2007. But I loved Ohana Breakfast.
That's a favorite for everybody.
That's a great answer. I had a great meal at the Crystal Palace and Main Street, believe it or not, with my kids one day, and I'll never forget that. I also had a meal there for someone's birthday. It was really special one year. So the Crystal Palace is kind of one of my like personal favorites. But there's this little place called Beaches and Cream. It's like an ice cream place that I haven't been to that I'm dying to go to. So there's that.
All right.
If you could redesign any Walt Disney World resort, what would it be? So take one of the pick one of the existing resorts that you don't really care for the theming of, and how would you redo it to make it better?
Well, as an Imagineer, you know I'm not going to knock on the work anyone else ever did. I can't say that they didn't do a great job on this attraction or this resort. However, I don't think the dolphin looks like a dolphin on the Swan of Dolphin. I just want to say that. And that's my answer. I think that I would probably do the dolphin.
As a perfectionist, you just want to redo the dolphin.
Just the dolphin itself, yeah. Now, it might be a dolphin fish. I don't know, but it's called the Swan and the Dolphin. The swan looks like a swan. The dolphin doesn't look like a dolphin.
That's fair.
Well, the only one I really stayed at was the Polynesian, and it's perfect. And then it did get redesigned, and Timmy worked on it. So
yeah,
I'm just going to say,
no, I built the slide. I built the area.
It was redesigned, and I had such a good experience there that will probably always be my favorite.
Oh,
Timmy, how do you feel about the new Moana theme?
I think that Disney needs to do whatever they feel they need to do. I love Lilo and Stitch. Like, I am huge about Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah.
But, you know, things change, and like, I had to watch them get rid of 20,000 Leagues, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Like, I've seen a lot of stuff come and go. I was a part of turning the Maelstrom into Frozen. Like, that was a heartbreaking thing for me. So I'm okay with it. You know, if it's what the company needs to do, I have to kind of support that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more of a Walt traditionist than a Disney company traditionist. Like, I believe in Walt and the magic and Mickey more than I do in making money. But one thing has to have the other. So I if that's what the company needs to do, then I guess. Because I love both movies. Lilo and Stitch was amazing. And so was Moana. So I guess, it's an easy switch, too. They're both
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, it's a real easy switch.
Favorite film of all time? Doesn't have to be Disney.
Oh, that's easy. My favorite film and my favorite book are the same. Lord of the Rings, hands down. And I mean, starting with The Silmarillion, going through The Hobbit, and all three volumes of The Lord of the Rings, plus the appendix. Tolkien was a genius.
Catherine, we could come back to talk Lord of the Rings anytime you'd like, because that's my baby as well.
I read all that stuff, and I loved it too. But I'd have to say, favorite film. I'm like a real simple person, really. I liked Pollyanna. I liked Escape from Witch Mountain. I liked like the Shaggy D.A. Like, I like simple movies like that for me. Sometimes it's really fun. But the best movie I guess I ever saw, oh, was Silence of the Lambs. That movie was hilarious. I thought that was funny, man. Oh, yeah. The one-liners from that movie are still being used today. So
That's true. Do you have a favorite book, Timmy?
Yeah, I was like, Catherine already answered this one.
Brian Lumley wrote a book called The Necroscope, and it's a haunted book. And it was the only book that ever had me so scared. I almost couldn't turn the page. I was so terrified. And I'm a grown man. I'm like, what is going on? So I'll never forget that. And I'll stop there and let Catherine answer.
Oh, I already said it was Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Right. Oh, right, right.
All right. Yeah. So favorite animated character. Again, it doesn't need to be Disney.
I love Buzz Lightyear. I'm sorry, but I think he's the coolest character in the world.
Yes.
I love Buzz Lightyear. Yeah.
I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons so my parents could sleep in. And Bugs Bunny and the Roadrunner, I mean, it was some of my earliest memories of watching them. And it's just so classic and so funny. And I guess they'll always have to be my favorite.
Yeah, that's a good one. Timmy, if you did meet one person in the world, who would it be?
Dead or alive?
Well, I think if they're dead, I think we know the answer. Maybe not. Either one.
If I could talk to Albert Einstein or I could talk to Leonardo da Vinci, man, they'd be first. But alive, Paul McCartney, probably.
Okay. Catherine?
That's a tough one. The one person I really wanted to meet has passed away. I don't know about that one. I really don't.
Come on.
Well, I already met
somebody.
Met Timmy Britt.
All right, there. That's
now my butt is kissed. Yeah.
I always admired the cellist, Mstislav Rostropovich. I play the cello, and I would have loved to have sat down and spent half an hour just talking with him.
What? Yeah, I guess that would be my answer. I'd like to meet Walt. Are you kidding me? I never met him. Like, I swear, when I leave this planet, him and I are going to shoot 18 holes, and we're going to walk a golf course.
Right, yeah.
And we're going to have a great conversation, just Walt and myself.
All right.
That's another book somewhere down the road, the 18 holes with me and Walt.
I'm all in on that one.
Yeah.
So, Timmy, who is the most famous person you have ever met?
Man, I was friends with Steve Sable, and he was like a great guy. He started NFL Films, so the National Football League, every video you see, yeah, his family started that. And then there's J.K. Rowling. She's amazing. And then James Cameron, and, you know, people threw art that way. But every single one of them was just a person. I never met a famous person that wasn't really sweet to me or nice to me or just – was just being kind to me just because it was the right thing to do. Like, they're just, so I've only met good big celebrities, like, and I've only met them for a second, like, never even shook their hand. You know, they just said hello and thank you. It's like that. Cause I'm sitting there again with all the people that did it. Not just me. It was all the Imagineers. So we all got thanked by these people. Steve Sable, though, I almost parked in his spot and then went in his private doorway and ran into him in a hallway. And man, I knew who he was and he had no idea who I was. And I was so starstruck. And he's the one that told me, he's like, everybody's just a person. So just be yourself. And I got to know him and I realized, all right. And then I started meeting football. Like, I met every sports announcer and I met every athlete. Like, you know, they'd come through NFL Films and just for different reasons for advertising. But I'd get to meet like Ron Jaworski and I'd get to meet all different football heroes and cheerleaders and amazing people. So I've met a lot of amazing people. I'd have to say the coolest person I met was Steve Sable. He was just the nicest guy. It really was cool to me. Yeah.
That's awesome. Catherine, anything?
Yeah, I met Gerald Ford and it was a very scary circumstance. I'd taken my children to the north rim of the Grand Canyon and thought it would be pretty slow there and a lot of fun, but there were Secret Service men everywhere and because Gerald and Betty Ford were vacationing there, but I didn't see him until I was standing outside on a patio outside the restaurant lodge, looking down into the canyon with my 3-year-old daughter, and I heard a scuffle. And I turned around just in time to see a Secret Service man sweeping up my four-year-old son, who had been whirling around with this big branch and had nearly whacked the former president in the knees.
What an incredible story.
Yeah. I said, that's the guy who's going to write the book for me, man.
Yeah. I met Gerald Ford, but I don't think he was real happy to meet me. But the Secret Service guys did their job. Nobody was hurt. Our tax dollars will work. Makes a great story.
That's awesome. All right, Timmy, last question for you. You've been dreading it for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Animation or Imagineering?
My animation job was the most fun I've ever had. Imagineering was the most rewarding. Pixar. That's my answer. I'm going to Pixar. That's my answer. Awesome. I mean, I'm about to tell you, that's my answer.
That's great. So before we finally wrap up the show, Timmy, we'd like to give our guests kind of a moment for them to kind of to pitch again your product, where people can find you, social media, all that stuff. So we're trying to open the floor to you on tell our listeners whatever you want about yourself, how to find you guys and, you know, go buy your book type thing.
Well, first of all, I'm on Instagram. So if you just go to Timmy Britt Studios on Instagram, you know, follow me and I'll follow you back. I don't hashtag people. It's all natural and organic. But if you're an artist and you want to come and be part of my friends that are all artists, join me at Timmy Britt Studios. And then there's the book on Amazon. If you go to Amazon and look for Extraordinary Everyday Magic, I'm telling you, it's not a 470-page book. It's a book with 47 chapters. That's all it is. When you look at each chapter, you'll see, well, this chapter was really, really spoke to me. And then I'm going to hand it over to Catherine because that's all I know. I have the book on Amazon and I have my Instagram. That's all I'm allowed to know. I'm Timmy here. My team takes care of that. So I'm going to let my team do that. Catherine, if you would tell people, that'd be great.
All right. Of course, the book is on Amazon and it's easy to find. And we have another Instagram page, EOE Magic Book, for Extraordinary Magic Book. We have a Facebook page and we have a YouTube channel, which has a lot of pictures of speeded up pictures of Timmy drawing different characters. And we haven't kept that one as current as I would like to, because we've been busy with so much else, but there's some really cool stuff there. And anytime you go to our website, which is timmybritt.art, there's all kinds of information about the book. You can read the first three chapters to see if you want to buy it, but I know you will. And if you contact us through the contact us page and ask for it, give us your address, we will send you an autograph book plate.
Yeah, I'll be happy to sign it. I'll be happy to sign it and you stick it right in the book. Yeah, I'd love to do it.
Yeah, I have a pile of them already, but yeah. And we will send that out to anybody who contacts us through our contact page on our timmybritt.art.
That's awesome.
That's it. Yeah.
And what we're going to do is for you guys, we're going to put your website, Timmy, as well as a link to your Amazon book in our show notes to make it easier for the listeners to go hit the show notes and click the link.
And I'll blow up the Disney Guys Uncensored. If you just give me a logo, I'll throw it right on Instagram and let people know.
Absolutely.
We'll give you, I need that. I want to promote you guys.
We'll give you the logo and the link to the podcast. We could do that for you. And remember, everyone, if you guys wanted a free copy of the book, we're giving it away. So
And there's four ways to enter. That means you can enter up to four times. Get your name in that drawing four different times. So make sure you join the Ohana if you haven't already. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Send us a question or send a question you want us to pass along to Timmy, or leave us a review, hopefully a 5-star review for this You Guys Uncensored podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to it, wherever you can give us 5 stars. Go ahead, give us that review. And for each one of those things you do, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a copy of Timmy Britt's book, Extraordinary Everyday Magic. And this copy is actually signed by author. No stick-on book plate on this one. This is hand-signed by Mr. Britt himself.
I did. We signed it and we sent it out to you. Yeah, thank you.
Timmy and Catherine and Dan, we want to thank you so much. Thank you for staying up late with us as well. We had an absolute blast. You guys will always be welcome back if you want.
I'd love to come back. You guys are so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that I missed Ryan and Jordana. Please give them both, you know, big hugs. Yeah.
If they do just as much work as we do, we're pretty stable, the four of us. So
Thank you so much, you guys do a great job. Yeah, I love it. I love your logo too. I don't know who designed it for you, but they did a great job.
Believe it or not, one of our listeners designed it for us.
Whoever it is out there did that.
Very talented graphic designer.
So you could tell them that an Imagineer saw their work and made a note of it and said it out loud because it is. They did a great job. It's exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we're done. Is that it?
That is going to wrap up this week's episode with Timmy Britt. Thank you guys so much for joining us again. And thanks for listening to The Disney Guys Uncensored.
After careful consideration, I've decided not to endorse your park.